Hello, dear souls, and welcome back to the second half of our discussion. It's Sunday, February 27th, 2011. I'm Zanna Harris.
And I'm Deborah Barclay.
And we're here with Suzanne.
Friend to both.
Yes. So let's begin this segment by once again settling in, taking a moment to gather our thoughts, bring ourselves once again fully into the room, and allowing all of the background noise to fade into silence, bringing ourselves fully into the present moment, here and now, opening our hearts and our minds to one another and to the journey that we all share. So for this segment, we're going to begin by speaking about the third sutra of Samadhipada. And the third sutra, Tada Drastu Svarupi Vastanam. Tada means then or at that time. Drastu is the soul or the seer. Svarupi means in his own or in his state. And avastanam means to abide, to reside, or to radiate. So, Deborah, your translation?
Then the seer, or the self, abides in his own nature.
That is Satchinananda?
Yes.
Iyengar, excuse me. Then the seer dwells in his own true splendor. And Shearer? Number three, yes.
When the mind has settled, we are established in our essential nature, which is unbounded consciousness.
Wow.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah.
And I love that.
That's very different.
Yeah, it's very different, yes.
But more clear.
So
I like that one. Yeah.
And actually, in my meditation or my contemplation this morning, this popped into my head. The soul is in the driver's seat.
Well then, okay. Now that's an interesting thought, actually. That's a very interesting thought.
Isn't that amazing? But it's true, it's true. We operate from that intuition, from that
however you want to define what soul is. Mm-hmm. But yes, there is something in the driver's seat, hopefully. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Other than just being driven by ego, being
yes.
driven by...
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, in by our mind. Our mind is volitional. It's in constant movement, right?
Uh-huh.
It's always going on something. And I think, last time we did it, we talked about mind. We talked about the three components of the mind.
Right.
We talked about manas. Which is our memories, our impressions, which give form.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We talked about ahamkara, which is the ego, and that gives shape. And we talked about buddhi, or intelligence, which gives substance. Right? And because all of this brings about this seeming reality, right? We take it to be our identity. We take it to be our true nature. But it's only a collection of information gathered through those five tone mantras that I talked about in our last segment.
Right.
Our sensory perceptions. It's simply a collection of impressions
mm-hmm.
that we take to be what is our true nature. And that's not what we try, that's not our essence.
It's how we interpret them.
It's how we interpret them.
Because they're there, mm-hmm. and it's what value and interpretation you want to place upon them.
Mm-hmm. And it's also something that's tangible. It's something that we can, mm-hmm. the soul or our true nature is so intangible.
Mm-hmm.
It's so hard to get a grip on, to get a grasp of.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas we can put our hands on, you know, how much money we have, what kind of car we're driving, what our job is,
yeah.
you know, and those are the things we define ourselves by, right? to define ourselves by our true nature, our soul. How do you describe that?
Right.
How do you describe that? So if we remember the last sutra, the fluctuations or movements of consciousness, that's exactly what is being spoken of. This movement of mind, this formation of these three components. It's how they move, how they interact, and that's the fluctuations, I think, that's being spoken of. The interaction between these three components. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. So once the movements are still, the true self can shine through, is what this sutra is saying. The lens of consciousness becomes translucent, and our inner splendor radiates outward.
Yeah, that goes back to the lens again, mm-hmm, that we talked about last week.
Mm-hmm. The one that becomes pitted and scarred and dirtied,
right,
because of all the outside stuff bouncing off the surface.
Right.
Yeah, and it's okay. So we are able to polish that off so that the inner light can shine outward. Right. So, the fourth sutra, Vritti Sarupyam Itaratra. Wow. I have no idea if I'm saying that right, but like I said,
we'll go
with that.
Yeah.
Okay, so Vritti, behaviors, fluctuations, the state of mind, and we also said that it suggested the whirlpool, vortex.
The vortex.
Right.
Sarupyam, identification or closeness, which I think is really a good point. We identify with what we're closest to. Mm-hmm. And itaratra, at other times. Hmm. So for Satchitananda?
At other times, the self appears to assume the forms of the mental modifications.
Iyengar, at other times the seer identifies with the fluctuating consciousness.
Okay.
Shira?
Our essential nature is usually overshadowed by the activity of the mind.
Mm-hmm. And I think seems or usually are two very key words here. And
say that again.
Seems in Satchitananda's translation. And usually, mm-hmm, in your translation, and then for Itaratra, the fact that they said identification and closeness, not in Itaratra, but Sarupyam, identification and closeness, I think those things are very key.
It's not an absolute.
It's not an absolute. The true soul always rests in its own identity.
Mm-hmm. It can do nothing other.
It can do nothing other. It's changeless. But we allow the ego, the consciousness, to attach its impression onto the lens or filter of our awareness so that what we perceive is a distorted reflection of the truth.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So we talked about Satchitananda has the example of the wavy mirror.
Right.
In his translation, where we know what our face looks like. When we look at it in a wavy mirror, we see it all distorted, but we know that that's not what our face looks like.
Well, he was saying that we don't know our true face because we never actually see our face. Our face is the seer.
That's the soul.
Right.
We don't know what our true soul looks like, so we're actually looking at the wavy mirror.
Like looking in water.
Yeah, and that's the example that I would use is the lake, the surface of a lake. When it's placid and clear, that stillness that we talk about,
mm-hmm,
we can see through to the bottom if it's a clear, pristine lake. If it's polluted, we can't see the bottom. If there's stormy weather and the surface is choppy,
any ripples.
Ripples, we can't see the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean the bottom's not there. That doesn't mean the bottom doesn't exist. It's just we aren't able to see it. All we can see is dirty water or choppy waves. Right?
Well, I think it's similar to like the idea of colored glasses. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're wearing colored glasses, you see the world yellow or pink.
Right.
You know, when you take those off, that's when you have clarity.
That's right. Exactly.
So it's interesting.
Exactly. But when you have them on, no one can tell you.
The world's not pink or yellow.
Because what you're seeing is pink.
Right. Yeah.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
So this is an essentially, this sutra is saying take off the glasses.
Take off the glasses.
The rose-colored glasses.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, or blue, or, you know. Anything.
So why is it that we have? I mean, if this Manomaya Kosha is in the way, if this consciousness, all these fluctuations, all this interaction between these three components are so in the way of our being able to operate from that place of knowing, why the heck does it even exist?
Why is it there? I think it comes as a way to deal with our senses in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how we have to, I mean, if you're super exposed, think about a baby, I mean, that's vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have these, like, these things that we build up over
That's a good point.
You know, we are really, really vulnerable, and that can be a painful experience.
Mm-hmm.
Life can be painful, I think, if we have that openness completely.
Mm-hmm.
So I think as we live, you know...
innocence, that naivety. Yeah.
Yeah, we build things around us for protection. It makes sense to me, you know, that we
do that. That is a good point. That's a very good point.
And then
at
some point you have to start to say, hey, you know what? I don't need to have that anymore. Like,
yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think also... there's such a huge amount of incoming information.
Right.
Good, bad, you know,
we
indifferent.
Have to be able to filter it.
It's just a huge amount. And if we had to consciously think about every single piece of input, we would never move.
I mean, you
couldn't function. You'd be processing continuously everything.
Yeah.
The air we're breathing, every sound, every sight, every color, every noise, everything, every touch, every feel, through all the senses you said earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like we would be...
Immobilized.
Yeah. Totally.
Right. That does make sense.
Or if we had to think about every breath we took, or every heartbeat, or every muscle movement. Okay, I now have to tighten this and this and this just to walk or something. It's like we would never. So we have to... You know, nature does a lot of it for us. We have a lot of
involuntary
heart and breathing and whatnot.
Right.
And we just kind of carry that on and kind of filter out all kinds of stuff that could be helpful.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, it comes to the point where, yeah, exactly. We get so caught up on going on into automatic or... so caught up in protecting ourselves with these layers that, like you said, at some point we have to be able to consciously choose, okay, which filters am I going to use and which ones am I going to discard?
Yeah, or when, you know,
and when.
I think if we
and
have them
when,
as
exactly.
artillery.
I think
exactly.
Debbie had a
we
really...
We lose sight of being able to do that.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
A really good point, because we do. We build up all kinds of protections, layers of protection, because we needed it.
We need it,
once.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still there, whether we need it now or not.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't ever go back and look, oh, is this really needed now? Is this important now? Is this functioning to my greater good now?
Right.
And a lot of times the answer is no.
Yeah.
But we never go back and quiet our minds enough to look at it and be open to going, no, it's safe now to let that go and to grow and to be, and I think that's part of what this journey is about.
Absolutely.
So I think you made a very, very good point with that.
Excellent. So the functions of those three components of consciousness, manas, that's the one that gathers information through our sense perceptions, and its basic primal function was to seek pleasure and avoid pain.
Okay.
Seek pleasure, avoid pain.
Basic human.
It's chocolate.
It's our memory. It's our memory imprints. It's what teaches us that we can't make choices. The mind, even though it's called the mind, does not really have a mind of its own. It really doesn't. It can't make any discerning choices. It can't. It can go to the store and know that red is not a good color on me. You know, when we're picking out a shirt, blue suits me better. But it can't say, "Can I really afford the shirt?"
You know? Are you saying something else needs to kick in?
Something else needs to kick in. Okay, Ahamkara, the I shape, the ego, can differentiate. The reason it's there is to differentiate between you and I. It's the ability to say, okay, I am female, that's the male, and okay, this is how
we are different.
We are different, but that's I need to connect with that so that I can procreate and survive. Survival of the species. It's when Buddhi kicks in and uses the input from both the other ones, the intelligence, the discernment. Buddhi is the one that gives us the ability to choose. It's the one that gives us the ability to not only make choices, but to have the conscience behind those choices.
Mm-hmm.
So Manas is clever. The mind is clever. It's like the nation that takes the old armaments and turns them into nuclear weapons, right? And it's clever, but it's not operating with conscience. It doesn't use that power consciously and decide not to blow up the world.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I don't know if I really explained that well.
So, let me clarify in my mind.
Yeah, please. Because I don't think that came out exactly like I wanted it to.
You're saying the Buddha.
Buddhi,
okay.
Buddhi.
Is the process, is the ability of actually making the decision?
It's the intelligence that prompts growth and change.
Ah.
It can look at things objectively and make choices.
So it's a different level of consciousness.
Yes.
Or a different focus of level of consciousness.
Yes, okay. Than the manas.
Focus. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, that makes...
Yeah, the manas uses past experiences to sift and sort.
Okay.
Memory is an aspect of mind.
Okay.
And it gathers information through our senses, but it can't make choices. It only refers to our past imprints.
Okay.
Right?
So it's one avenue.
It's one avenue. The Ahamkara, the eye shape, it's kind of like, the Ahamkara is like a light filament in a bulb, right? It glows, but it's not the source of the electricity.
Okay.
All right? It's the part of our consciousness that's kind of covered with super glue. Okay? Memories, possessions, desires, experiences, attachments, aversions,
kind
achievements.
Velcro, stuff sticks.
Opinions, they
right.
all stick to that, right?
Yeah.
It's like barnacles to the hull of a ship.
See, I'd rather think of it as Velcro, because that
Velcro's
way...
Velcro's good.
Because you can take things back.
Right.
They're there.
Well, you can
yeah. You might want
you
to...
scrape the barnacles.
Jettison
yeah.
some of that sometime.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. This is all paraphrasing Iyengar. And... Its contact with the outer world is filtered through mind and the senses. Okay? Its contact with the outer world is filtered through mind and the senses, the first one. And it accumulates and the totality of all that is declared as being me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We are the sum total
of our
experiences.
Right. My success, my husband, my wife, my car, my money, my job, my, you know. That's
history.
All. Yeah. my history, exactly. And buddhi, again, is the intelligence that prompts growth and change through, with all that information. Okay, instead of just taking that everything and kind of just rearranging it, you know, and saying, oh, it looks different now because I've just kind of changed the way the furniture is arranged in the room, yeah. You know, instead of taking out all the furniture and really making a real change, you know, that's what buddhi does.
Or upgrading the furniture.
Mm-hmm, uh-huh. Mm-hmm, exactly. So, I think Iyengar says it really nicely. He says, it's not the absence of cleverness that makes one stupid. It's the failure to learn from past mistakes.
Mm. Indeed.
Okay? We're all stupid sometime. But relatively speaking, we're all clever all the time. Okay?
It's an interesting thought.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, and that's where that example with the countries using nuclear armaments. They're clever enough to develop these armaments, but did they suddenly get stupid because they chose to use them?
Right.
You know?
Right.
No.
That's at odds a bit with my mm-hmm. first interpretation of your saying that. Mine would be, if we're clever all the time, to me that's coming from a place, from a positive place.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we're stupid, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's because we're clever all the time. We can always...
But that's a positive, instead of saying we're stupid all the time, which mm-hmm. is a negative. And mm-hmm. sometimes we're clever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, there's a difference
mm-hmm.
of what the underlying basis is.
Mm-hmm.
I like the positive
mm-hmm.
yeah.
better.
Yeah, the positive reinforcement.
But when you're talking about nuclear arms, it's like, yeah. wait a minute, if we're clever enough to make them all the time,
mm-hmm.
then that's not necessarily a positive.
That's right.
So
that's right.
So I'm having a...
We're clever enough to make them, but we're still stupid in the fact that we've made them.
Yes. So we have to be even cleverer as to how to use them.
Or not to use them at all. That's real change.
Well, they're trying to use nuclear for energy.
Nuclear energy is one thing. Nuclear weapons are right. a total different
so
thing.
So worldwide, you know,
right, right.
A lot of people's
it's
electricity
how we, how
is
we
produced.
Use those. Yeah.
It's how we're going to be clever.
Right. It's whether we innovate
mm-hmm.
or whether we invent.
What do we do with our
cleverness? We can invent by simply rearranging all old ideas into new forms. We can innovate by using those new forms in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's
and
a distinction.
And that's where buddhi comes in. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think I was trying to get. Took me a while to get there. So
as life does.
As life does. So the whole technique of yoga, its practice and restraint, is aimed at dissociating consciousness from its identification with the phenomenal world, at restraining the senses by which it is ensnared, and at cleansing and purifying the lens of citta, or consciousness, until it transmits wholly and only the light of the soul. And that's Iyengar once again. I love that. All right, so this is...
Can you say that again?
Mm-hmm, I can.
Please.
I can. The whole technique of yoga, its practice and restraint, is aimed at dissociating consciousness from its identification with the phenomenal world.
Okay.
At restraining the senses by which it is ensnared, and at cleansing and purifying the lens of citta, or consciousness, until it transmits wholly and only the light of the soul, which is what we've been talking about this whole time.
To restate what Alistair Shearer's interpretation of Patanjali is, our essential nature is usually overshadowed by the activity of the mind, thus the ensnarement.
Right, that's the ensnarement, exactly. So we'll be delving deeper into the causes behind the movements of consciousness in our future discussions.
Okay. The next week.
Next, or the week after next, actually.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And this
Our next meeting, yes.
And this will conclude our discussion for today. I would like to urge all of you to keep in mind the concepts we've discussed as you walk through the next couple of weeks. Notice your experiences in relation to them and see as well how your practice of yogasana might also bring more clarity to these subjects. We will look forward to hearing about your observations and experiences in our next meeting.
Remember to check our website and its related links for more information on our future meetings. That's www.wayoftheyogi.com.
For now, walk in peace. But know that we may make the journey in the company of each other. It is still an individual path we follow to the ultimate unification with the infinite within each of us. Lokaha samastaha sukhino bhavantu. May all beings experience the blessings of eternal happiness. Om Shanti. Namaste.
Namaste.
Om Shanti. Shanti.